back to Disgusting Horror, where we
vocalize our views on a variety of freaky flicks for Valentine's Day. And Mel, this is a very special episode, so why don't you tell the good people listening what we're going to be doing today?
We are talking about romantic horror. I don't know, is that what we want to say?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, yeah, this
horror
is
horror romance.
It's a special episode. It's a Valentine's Day episode.
Yeah.
Where we are going to be talking about two films, one we haven't seen yet.
tell them that.
Well, it's important to know. Okay. So we will be covering The Fly, David Cronenberg's classic 1986 film, as well as the new release, Lisa Frankenstein, which is in theaters, like February 9th, I believe. So, yeah, and we will be seeing it and then recording our thoughts on it just as we get out of the theater. Yeah. So that'll be very fun. First, we're going to be kicking it off with a fan favorite segment.
Yay.
Spotties and Notties.
Yeah.
We're back. It's been a while, so we have seen a lot of things. So, Mel, why don't you start us off? What's your spotty this week?
I had a lot to choose from because, like you said, it had been a while, but I still wanted to keep it current because of my just thought process.
Yeah, and we've been watching a lot of stuff lately.
Yeah.
A lot of good stuff.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff. But my spotty is Ju-on The Grudge 2.
Yes.
I was like, is it part 2 or 2?
2.
Ju-on The Grudge 2. We watched this last week, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was really excited. What did I say to you? I said, I'm in the mood to watch something like as if I was watching Gangnam Haunted Asylum again for the first time.
Yeah.
And we were looking through and I was like, I don't know. And then you're like, we could watch Ju-on The Grudge 2. And I was like, that's exactly it. That's exactly what I want.
Mm-hmm. What's this movie about?
Basically, it's hard to describe. All these characters, different experiences after shooting horror film or like horror spot in a certain house.
In the original Ju-on house.
In the original Ju-on house, yes,
yeah.
Correct. It's like I said, it's non-linear, and you kind of see different characters at different times, which is interesting. But man, this worked so good for me. Mm-hmm. I was watching it and I was just thinking like, oh, this is one of the best horror movies I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's very different from the first one. This one's a lot...
Which I haven't seen.
Well, yeah, the second one is a lot more visceral and a lot more like in-your-face horror.
Yeah.
When the first one is a lot more atmospheric and kind of about, you know, like more traditional like Japanese ghost like folklore.
Sure.
Where like it seems like the ghosts don't even super understand what they're going through.
Hmm.
Yeah, one of the spirits in the original, like whenever she shows up, looks like kind of scared.
Mm.
So yeah, and we don't get that at all in the second one.
No.
She is a malevolent spirit, yeah, in the second one. So,
and it was so good but also so scary.
Very
like,
scary.
I love Ringu, but I don't find it scary. I love it. This I was genuinely like horrified, scared to death.
Yes.
And it was awesome and I just kept loving it as it was going along. Didn't lose steam for me. It just ruled front to back. I gave it a 5 stars so fast.
Yeah, 90 minute and just like every scene is just like it has a purpose of being there and like it's just a great watch. Just like lots of great scare sequences and like they're paced out really well, and yeah, I highly recommend it. I gave it a 4.5.
Where can people watch it, Preston?
Oh, it's hard.
Yeah.
You have to rent it.
Yeah.
So,
sorry.
Do that, though. Right after we watched it, I actually ordered the Ju-on The Grudge 1 and 2 Collector's Edition on Blu-ray, so we'll have that.
Nice.
Yeah, so.
Preston,
mm-hmm,
what about your spotty?
Yeah, my spotty this week is a film called Confessions that
we both
watched. This was on my radar for a very long time. I had heard a lot about it, but purposefully like kept myself in the dark. I know that it was a book, and it was one of those things where I was in like a limbo of like, oh, well, I want to read the book before I watch it, but then I just never read the book, so then I never watch the movie.
Yeah.
This is my synopsis for Confessions. A grieving mother goes to unpredictable lengths to exact revenge on the two boys who are responsible for her daughter's death. This film is definitely on the thriller side of things, and it's very, like, what's going to happen next. Like, it's you learn like new information that like recontextualizes what you've already seen, and like the film is actively ahead of you in a very engaging way. And it's just always like enthralling to watch because you're always learning something new. And like the thing that you're learning is just like the movie knows exactly what you're wondering about and then kind of like shows you stuff. Like,
I would look up absolutely nothing about it.
Mm-hmm.
I would just take our word for it and just watch it.
Yeah. The first half hour especially is like a masterpiece.
Yeah.
The rest is amazing as well. But that first like 30 minutes, I was like, wow. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, just don't look up anything about it. Just watch it. But that being said, I did find out something about it and I still was like blown away.
Yeah. So, and it's a Japanese film to be known. So
where can people find this?
Same deal. You're going to have to rent it. But oh man, is it worth it? It seems like the sort of thing that Canopy would like pick up. So like maybe someday it would be on Canopy. But for now, just rent it. It was so good, and especially the directing was so good that like I looked into the director's like other stuff and like have added his stuff to my watch list, and I want to check out his style because I really liked how Confessions was presented. So
agreed.
That's Confessions. I gave it a 4.5.
I think I gave it a 5. Four and a half or five for sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So Mal, what's your naughty
This
special V-Day episode?
Mine is Chicago Med, the TV show.
Okay.
So if you're someone who has TikTok, and if you're someone who's on TikTok late at night, you will know that there's a lot of accounts that what they do is just post like snippets of shows, but they'll post like kind of four of them so you get the complete story.
Oh.
And if you're up late at night, like me, you get sucked in and you'll end up watching like bits of episodes. And one that I always end up enjoying is Chicago Med, which is part of the like Chicago Med, Chicago PD, Chicago Fire. So I've watched enough where I was like, I probably should just watch the show. Like, I should just watch the show. And I don't know, maybe I need to give it more of a chance, but I watched the first episode, which, like, the pilot should really grab you, and it did not grab me. It didn't even seem like it was trying to do anything different from the other shows. And I was so disappointed because I love the clips. And so, and I wanted, like, a pulpy, like, hospital, like, I know what I'm getting into, but it wasn't giving it to me. And I was like, damn it. So that was just so disappointing. So I was like, well, okay, I guess I gotta find something else, and now I'm on Degrassi, but which I do love. What is your naughty?
Well, like I mentioned earlier, we've been watching a lot of really great stuff lately, so I actually had to like go pretty far back in my Letterboxd diary to
see. That's how I ended up with a TV show.
To see something that I've rated less than like 3.5 stars. And I decided on a movie we watched over a month ago. It was called Magic Magic.
I almost did this.
Yeah.
Good thing I told you that. Okay, yeah.
But still, it would be like, fuck this movie. this is my synopsis for Magic Magic. A young woman on a trip to Chile with her friend is quickly abandoned by her, left with eccentric strangers who may not have the best intentions for her. So whenever we watch like a Blu-ray or a DVD, we always watch the trailers first.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't remember what Blu-ray it was. It might have been like the Evil Dead remake, but there was a trailer for this film called Magic Magic. And we saw Michael Cera being Chilean, I guess. And
is he or is he?
No,
like
he's not. In,
no, but well, I mean, oh, even in the movie. Thing, is he supposed to be a friend that's. I don't know.
No, he speaks the native language, but
right.
Yeah, it's all over the place. Do you remember the blonde woman who that was?
We'll put it this way. We watched it on Michael Cera and multiple other people we liked.
It was Juno Temple.
Yeah, we knew it was going to be bad, but...
Like, was it going to be fun bad?
I thought it was going to be like fun 2000s bad, which you guys know that I like.
Yeah, like haha, Michael Cera goofing off sort of thing. And like, He does get to goof off, but his character especially is like malevolent and hard to watch. And
so, maybe one of the most unlikable characters I've ever watched in something.
So why is this movie bad?
Oh, God. How much time do we got? It is bad because of the plot,
the
writing,
the way the plot unfolds. Is pretty bad.
The acting.
The ending.
The directing.
The ending.
The ending.
The ending.
The lack of ending. Ending. The lack of, like,
the lack.
I don't know why they made this movie. Like, I don't know what right. was inspired them.
It didn't seem, especially towards the end, it didn't seem like anyone was, like, that, like, invested in it making it
really
anymore.
Really was like, God, let's wrap this shit up.
Yeah, yeah. Lack of any, like, hairbrush for Juno Temple. Do you remember her hair?
Yeah, I do.
It was really what would you call that? Like, it was like
frizzy,
yeah, like ratty,
but like not in a movie way,
like, right,
just
like
in
a
the
real
way that it
like
is.
A person would.
Yeah.
No good
at all. And I just, like, I was so pissed. I think I gave it a half star.
Yeah, you did. I checked. Yeah,
yeah. Don't watch it. Like, if you think you're going to do what we do and be like, haha, prank, we're going to watch this movie, don't do it. It's not what you think.
Yeah.
And Michael Cera doesn't need your money, as he is now running CeraVe, the skincare company. So.
Mm-hmm. You know, quick sidebar, like, isn't the fact that, like, Super Bowl commercials, like, they keep running them and you see them everywhere after the Super Bowl, doesn't that, like, kind of diminish the whole thing about them being Super Bowl commercials?
I don't think so, only because I think the amount of people that see it the day of is far greater.
Oh, yeah, sure. I see that.
But I wouldn't know.
But it's like, it's less, because people are like, oh, I don't watch the Super Bowl for the game. I watch it for the commercials. It's like, well, you're not going to, like, miss them. Like, they're going to
be
everywhere.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I do know that there's, like, Temu ran, like, 3 ads during the Super Bowl.
And yeah, and it's like, isn't that a dropship?
It is,
company.
But they were like, damn, they've really got that much money. Like, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. I made microwave nachos today. That's my contribution to the Super Bowl. So.
Okay. Well, anyway, we're not here to talk about the Super Bowl. We're here to talk about...
We're not?
Disgusting sports.
Oh, my God.
We're here to talk about romantic horror films.
Horrifying romance.
Yes.
Whatever you want to call it.
And Mel... we did so much planning for this. We planned really well for this.
Yeah.
So well that we forgot to decide what order of things we're going to do. So I have a game.
I was going to say, I figured you'd just tell me.
Okay. So I have a game and you have like a little
just
activity.
That's strong. Just
okay, sure.
Notes.
Okay. What would you like to do first?
I think the game would be probably good for here.
Okay, great. So this game, I'm pretty excited about it.
Oh, well, yeah. I'm excited.
Yeah, okay. So I am going to give you a synopsis that I've written for a horror film. And I've written the synopsis as if it was like a rom-com or like a romance film. And you are going to guess what film I'm talking about. I'm not giving you options. You just have to guess.
Okay.
Did you
name this game?
No, like I said, we both did so much planning, as I said before, that,
yeah,
like, you know, sometimes you do so much planning that things get oversought. So anyway,
yeah.
And then when you guess it, we'll have a little discussion about, like, is this a good example of, like, you know, like a romantic horror film?
Love it.
All right. Starting off. While relaxing on the beaches of a remote island resort, a couple meets another couple who seem normal at first, but reveal to belong to a subculture of crime and hedonism.
Infinity Pool.
That is correct.
I love that movie.
Yeah, we never got to talk about it on this show, but that's definitely one where we have a big divide on opinions. But what do you think? Romance horror film? Like,
no, not at all.
No.
I do love it.
I would almost say it's like the anti-romance film.
Yeah.
Because nothing, there's no real, you know, not
it's
gonna
a lot
spoil
about self.
Exactly, yeah, self actualization and but yeah, definitely not like even an inkling of like wholesomeness at all. It's very debaucherous.
Yeah, even in I'm thinking, even in the couple that are like married and like married throughout and like are what could be considered happy, like
they're in a happy relationship but
it's
healthy,
irrelevant to the movie. You know,
yeah. And I also wanted to do this one because David Cronenberg, his son Brandon, made this film. So
yeah, which I don't know, we've maybe touched on this before, a lot of Cronenberg kind of crosses over my like too weird to enjoy list. I'm not as much of a weirder enjoyer, but his son typically hits that a better note for me with that, hence why I really enjoyed Infinity Pool.
Yeah, and he also made Possessor, which
I really liked, and it has my boy, so.
Yes. Which boy?
Christopher Abbott,
yes. All right, next. Sick of the modern dating scene. A woman gives her number to an awkwardly charming guy after a supermarket meet-cute. However, she finds out what he does for a living too late, leaving her life on the line.
Fresh,
it is.
I really liked this movie.
Uh-huh. I liked it too, yeah. I liked the first half.
I think I liked all of it.
Uh-huh.
Now, this is hard to say because I do think it steps into the realm of, like, romance and horror.
Mm-hmm. Especially like this isn't really a spoiler, but the title card comes probably like a half hour into the movie.
Yeah.
And everything before that I would say is like neatly like a good take on modern romance.
I was thinking mostly from his perspective.
Okay. Oh, how he views it. Interesting.
Because in his thought process and experience for part of the movie, he is having a romance that would be considered in that horrifying thing where it affects the story. And like, just because he doesn't know what's like really happening or the other person's thoughts, mm-hmm. from his perspective, it is what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when looking at it through his eyes, I would say yes.
Mm-hmm. I see that. Yeah. Yeah. The only thing I really have to say to add to that is, the movie has a great use of an orchestral version of exit music for a film by Radiohead. Next one. Two couples on vacation think they're in for the perfect oceanside getaway, but internal conflicts arise when they suspect the host of the home they're staying in is spying on them.
Oh, God, I always forget the name, but it has Jeremy Allen White.
Uh-huh.
And Alison Brie.
Uh-huh.
It's like The Getaway or something.
The Rental.
I'll give it to you.
You knew what it was.
Yeah. I'm like the Airbnb. Like I can't think of the name. Yes.
Okay.
I do think this fits in.
Okay.
It's been a bit since I saw it.
Yeah.
But I think the experiences and how different ideals of love and how love affects you is the story, and it's kind of primary to the other things and cause all the other things to happen, because without that aspect the movie would have gone a very different way and just been like not a horror and like been fine probably.
Yeah, for sure. I see that. Yeah,
I think that's why I liked it, because it is about those interpersonal dramas, and kind of how I like a movie like Bodies, 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 where a thing is happening, but it's really just revealing stuff that was already happening. And I think that this is that one. And I think that the things that it's revealing have a lot to do with that romantic love.
Yeah. And maybe that's why I wasn't like as hot on it as you, because I didn't necessarily get that.
Mm.
And like, I got that from Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. And like, I love that movie. So yeah. Enough.
I'm better at this than I thought I was going to be, to be clear.
Yeah, we got two more.
Yeah.
All right. On a road trip gone wrong, a young couple in love drive from New York to New Jersey, while a recently reunited couple hide in the back of their van, plotting to inhabit their bodies.
Are you sure this is something I've seen?
Yes.
Oh, Bride of Chucky.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely, 1,000%.
Yeah,
Without a doubt. I agree. If not one of the best examples.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And on like two levels.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's a horror romance black comedy, and it somehow like pulls all of that off within 82 minutes.
Yeah. Like, I love this because, and we'll talk about it in a bit when the game's done, but it really does get into that space of like when we're talking about romance and horror, are we talking about victims? Are we talking about perpetrators? Are we talking about both? Are we talking about one of each? You know, and it kind of gets into that.
Yeah, like a prey and predator
sort
of thing.
And
yeah.
Like Yeah, yeah. I'll say more later, but I think that's a good example specifically of that setup of them in the back and the people up front.
Yeah, totally. And like, and Chucky and Tiff like trying to like sabotage them, and like, and then also like the thing that I love about the movie is like Chucky and Tiffany in this film haven't seen each other in like decades, and then like they're kind of learning how they work together, while also like kind of learning about this like other couple in the front.
Yeah.
And kind of like using that to like help them out. It's really, if you haven't seen this movie, like check it out. Like I wrote it off for the longest time, 'cause I'm like, okay, this is the fourth Chucky film. It's like, how, okay, whatever, but
it's the best by way and far.
Yes. I would agree. Yeah. And, then if you like that, honestly, Seed of Chucky is really underrated. It's really fun. Yeah, and this is the last one.
I'm doing so good. I really thought I was gonna chunk this.
No, I knew you would do good. but yeah, the last one and then this one I thought might trip you up.
Okay.
After being outcast from his town for an accidental murder, a young man loses his bright future, but meets a young woman whose personal experiences allow her to sympathize with him and fall in love.
Halloween Ends.
That's correct.
Ah!
5 for 5. Good job.
Fuck yeah, that was good.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think?
Ooh, that's hard.
Now, okay, easier question for you is it a better romance film than a Halloween film?
No.
I'd say yes, because it's a terrible Halloween film. But
Halloween is in the holiday, or Halloween is in the franchise?
The franchise. Because, like, you know, when people diss Halloween Ends, a film that I really like, they always say, well, It just doesn't feel like a Halloween film. And I'm like, I agree. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Okay. I think that it is not, but I think that it plays with that it could be.
Okay.
Like, it's not, but that's important because it almost is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the rub.
Okay. Yeah. Give it a shot, guys. I like it. I don't know.
Oh my god.
I got like a little not made fun of, but I got a little razzed when we were at the Brood because I was getting the soundtrack on vinyl for.
Shout out to the Brood.
Yeah, the
in
Brood.
Chicago, you're cool as shit.
Yeah, the Brood was awesome. I also got Hello Mary Lou on Blu-ray, which is so sick.
And I got a pet rock that I named Kenny from my childhood friend. What a day.
That we just ran into.
That like, we ran into. Yeah. It was awesome. The Brood, I know you're listening. You guys are cool as shit. It was a great time.
The Brood is like an entity.
Yeah.
And like listens to us.
Yeah, which if you're listening to this, we posted some pictures of it. Go ahead and peruse, see their cool collection.
Yeah, and we also used that as an opportunity to announce that we are doing a season 3.
Yeah.
It'll start airing in April.
Yeah.
That's the plan. Yeah. So you have a little.
Yeah. Just kind of notes on horror and romance. I think like if you're someone who's not as into horror as us, you might be like, is there even a lot to talk about with that? You know? Mm-hmm. So I started, this sounds really silly, but I really started by Googling like horror and romance just to see not like our perspective, but like what is the perspective, like what comes up when you type that in.
Okay.
Because I thought, you know, we might have that very different from everyone. And one of the, a lot of it is like lists, right, of like the best. Some of them were movies, some of them were the best romance in horror movies. But I feel like a good kind of working definition of the type that we like, I found from this Screen Rant article that listed like their faves, but had like kind of a little zhuzh at the beginning of talking about it. And this quote, I feel like, really defines what we think it is and isn't.
Okay.
They said, while there are horror films that may throw in a relationship as a plot device, there are others that truly combine romantic drama with the terrifying world of horror movies. And I feel like that puts it well. It's not, you know, horror movies where there happens to be like a romantic relationship.
Yeah.
It's a movie that drives them. And while this isn't always true, I think a lot, we talked about this, of what rings true to me of what it is and isn't, is in a lot of slashers, they'll kind of be like a romance, quote unquote, but it really is just to get them in a position where someone's protecting the other and they're vulnerable. And that's not like really what we're interested in.
Yeah. Or to show like a sex scene.
Or to show a sex scene. Also yeah. true, Preston. Mm-hmm. As far as like what was on their list, their number one was Let the Right One In. The Fly was number 5.
Yeah, Let the Right One In. That's a good one because it's like a wholesome, like a childhood.
Yeah.
Like it's not even like necessarily romantic. It's like two young people who like just understand each other when no one else does.
Yeah.
And I just it's great.
Other kind of observations, not just within this article, but when I branched out, a lot of the movies that happen to fall into this are in some way or the other creature features.
Yeah.
Whether that's a monster, a vampire, a werewolf. And then even when you expand upon that and it's not necessarily monster, there are monster-like attributes, specifically cannibalism.
Right.
Bones and All was mentioned a ton, mm-hmm. Which I just had a conversation with someone because I said I hated it. And they were like, it's such a good love story. And I'm like, I know what you mean, but I didn't like it. So like even when it's not technically monsters, it's the avenue through which the romance is shown is a monster attribute kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Also which I found this really interesting when I Googled it, even though I just said like kind of horror and romance, a lot of novels came up more so than just movies.
Yeah.
So I think that has a lot to say on how romance and horror interplay and how it affects like the thought processes and the plot and not just an action device,
mm-hmm.
because a book can be better suited to that and showing those inner thoughts. And that's why I would kind of lend to it.
Yeah.
In general, a lot of lists had the same kind of things, some of which we probably would agree with, some of which we would not.
Mm.
But I still thought it was interesting. I tried to find more think pieces on it and there kind of like wasn't overall. I could find think pieces on like cannibalism and love and horror or vampirism and love and horror,
right.
but not kind of the overall use of it. The interesting thing that I thought just kind of summed it up well is like a Reddit conversation where someone was asking about the difference between writing for horror and writing for romance. And someone was like, not a lot.
Mm.
And I was like, that's so interesting.
Yeah.
So I thought it was just kind of fun to look into, like, okay, to the general public, what do they think of this? What comes to mind when you know, if I walked up to a random stranger and was like, what do you think?
Yeah, it's interesting about like writing romance versus horror, like not being like that different. When it comes to movies, we kind of say something similar with horror and comedy, which is a combo that we see quite a bit,
yeah.
because the process of scaring someone and the process of making someone laugh in the context of a film are very similar.
Yeah.
Where you want to catch them off guard, you want to do something unexpected that they haven't seen before, in order to like evoke that like kind of primal reaction.
Yeah.
And it's interesting about it being written in like the medium of like a novel being different that way.
Yeah.
Being romance and horror. The feeling of dread and the feeling of like having butterflies in your stomach, like, you know, like how do you evoke that, you know, like,
yeah.
So that is interesting to ponder and think about because, you know, in The Fly, which we'll talk about in a bit, like there are moments where like in the first half where you're like charmed by Jeff Goldblum's character.
Oh, yeah.
Seth, and then like him and Veronica are like getting along and it's like, aw.
Yeah.
This is great.
Yeah.
I hope nothing really bad happens, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought it was fun. And then some of the lists I read, and I would look at the first entry and go, I'm not going to look at this list. Because I could just tell from the first entry, I was like, they're just listing couples in horror movies.
Oh,
like,
okay. Yeah, any examples? Or
I don't even remember. I just so was like, no.
Gotcha.
Absolutely not.
If you like look up romance horror films on Google, like Google AI and like predictive algorithms aren't there yet because they will just list horror movies.
Yeah.
Like you can't even type in like horror comedies or like anything like that. Like they'll just give you a list of just a bunch of stuff. Even like if you type in like best horror movies or like best like Asian horror movies or anything like that, they'll just list a bunch of movies. So like don't depend on that. Depend on us.
Right.
Your tastemakers.
Obviously. That is why when you type in best horror podcast, we don't come up. It's just that AI isn't there yet.
Yeah, and it's like, well, nobody's searching that because like everyone already knows it's us.
Like, why would you need to search it?
Nobody needs to.
It's like, what color is the sky?
Yeah. Disgusting horror. So let's move on. To talk about The Fly. Bzz. So here's my synopsis. You're welcome. Genius scientist Seth Brundle is conducting experiments to make teleportation a reality when he meets Veronica, a journalist looking to document his progress. When he makes a massive breakthrough thanks to her, he tests it out on himself, only for his DNA to be spliced with that of a common housefly in the process.
Yeah, I had not seen this movie.
Yes.
I knew about it,
mm-hmm.
but I had not seen it.
I have seen this movie more than most movies. I've seen it anywhere between probably like 8 and 12 times.
I don't think I realized that.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really good movie. I really like this movie.
So true.
Yeah. First impressions, first watch, what'd you think of it?
I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in knowing I would like it. Mm-hmm. I did not go in knowing if I would really connect with it.
Okay.
You know, like, there's movies where I'm like, that was a good movie. I don't really care, but it was good. This movie, I cared, and I loved it.
And what you said about, like, this is good, but I don't connect with it. Like, I feel that way about, I think, like, every other David Cronenberg film I've seen. But, like, that is the difference with this. Like, is that you connect with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something that I think we can all agree on is that the casting and acting is, like, amazing.
Yes.
Like, it is what it is because of them and their chemistry and who they are.
Yes.
Gina Davis, what a babe.
Mm-hmm. She plays Veronica.
She was recommended for the role by Jeff Goldblum. They were dating at the time. And even he was, like, not really the pick.
They thought he wasn't marketable.
Yeah. And Cronenberg was like, just go with me. They did go with him.
This is my guy.
Yeah. He was like, this is my dude. And they just, like, they're so good. And something I said, and I said it and you're like, no, I know what you mean, is that this is a play film. And this is what we say often, where it's like, usually one location with less, you know, 2 to 4 people.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I know that sounds silly because of the makeup. Like, that would be insane to do.
Yeah.
But in every other aspect, it's totally giving a play.
Although you could, because in the movie, it's Jeff Goldblum in the makeup every time. But in a play, you could do it where different actors with similar builds are already in the makeup and they switch them out.
True.
You could do that. A little bit about the movie. It came out in 1986, and it's very, like, body horror. If you've never seen a David Cronenberg film, honestly, this is, like, the perfect one to watch first. I think it's easily his most accessible.
Yeah.
Which I mentioned earlier, I find a lot of his movies very, like, cold and very impersonal, which is definitely intended.
Yeah.
And there are some freaks out there who like that, but I need a little warmth, you know. I need to care about these people when they go through these, like, really, honestly, it's a tragedy, this film.
Yeah.
I think that at its heart, it is a romance film. Like, that's what the movie cares the most about. It begins and ends when their relationship begins and ends.
Yeah.
And so that's what the movie's concerned about.
Yeah, like, it's...
Like, all that messed up stuff happens in the middle.
In the context of the relationship.
And because of it.
Yeah.
Like I mentioned in my synopsis, Jeff Goldblum, his character, wouldn't have been able to make that big breakthrough without her help.
Yeah.
So that's big.
Yeah, and, like, even at the end, the resolution doesn't come from each character's, like, journey. It's literally... The only resolution you get is in knowing what happens to the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's the big rub of it.
You know? And when their own personal goals kind of, like, develop within the film, it still is connected to, like, the other person.
Yeah.
Like, you know, where Gina Davis finds out that she's pregnant, and she's not.
Spoiler.
She knows it's Seth's.
Yeah. Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah. But she doesn't know if it was before or after he accidentally spliced his DNA with a fucking housefly.
Yeah, pre or post fly.
Yeah. So I wouldn't take that gamble. She finds that out, and then he wants her to keep it because, like, if it is pre-fly, then he's like, this is like the last like pure thing.
Yeah, it's the last human vestige of him.
Yeah. But then, and this is so cool in the movie, and then when the brain DNA kind of like eats away at his brain, he starts to want the child to be like a fly thing.
Right.
So then his Brundlefly-ness can live on.
Yeah.
So I guess to back up real quick, the teleportation works with these telepods. They're these cool Star Wars looking things. And when he steps in it to test it on himself after a night of drinking and an argument with Gina Davis, he tests it on himself and it works. But right before he closes the door, a house fly flies in. And then when he emerges, the fly is gone.
But he has not, he doesn't know.
He doesn't know. And it's very gradual. The effects that are taking place. Like, he starts to get, like, a rash on his face, and then he starts adding, like a lot of sugar to his coffee, and talking very fast, and kind of bugging, a pun intended from the movie, but bugging his eyes out, and, like, talking very fast and stuff.
Yeah.
And that's how it first kind of materializes. It's really fun to track his kind of deterioration throughout the film. It gives like a really nice pace to the film, I think.
Yeah, and there's a lot. This is a movie where you could kind of imprint whatever you want onto it.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's true.
Made a note about like it kind of seems like, you know, addiction, and other people have seen it like as a metaphor for disease or specifically HIV/AIDS.
Yeah,
or,
because it came out in 86, right? So
there's kind of a lot you can put onto it and be correct or have good evidence for your argument.
And and this is where like the David Cronenberg aspect like really shines through, is because his films usually are pretty obtuse and like don't really give you all the details or tell you exactly what's going on.
Yeah, it's a good movie, man. It's that beginning part where we're just living in their new romance, mm-hmm. and
it's fun.
They're hanging out in the apartment and
in the lab.
Yeah, in the lab, and just learning about each other, you know, like when she is like, do you wear the same, are you wearing the same clothes? And he's like, no, I have like five sets of the same thing. And she opens closet like he does indeed have five sets of the same thing. And
it's a nice touch.
Yeah, just kind of like that getting to know each other. And something I was thinking about that's really fun is in the first scene, aggressor is the wrong word, but he's the one that's really hitting on her. Like, because she's coming back for journalistic reasons. And then he's like, oh, I thought we were just hanging. But really then once we get going and she sees him, she really is the one that turns and is like really falling hard.
Yeah. And there's a really great line. It's one of the first exchanges that they have where she's like, oh, you don't get out much, do you? And he's like, you can tell that? Like, not negating that, like, he doesn't get out much, but yeah. And to go back for a second, like, her discovering that, like, he wears the same, like, he has the five pairs of the same clothes, like, we only learn that about Seth because she inquired about it. Like, we uncover information about these characters through the other one, like, kind of developing feelings and kind of like finding out things themselves. So we're finding out about Seth while she is.
Yeah, like, we're falling in love with each character because they are.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And that's just a really strong strong script. And you know a movie is really good, too, when, you know, it's just pretty much straight romance, like sci-fi romance for the first, like, half hour or so. And honestly, you know a movie's good when you're like, I would just watch this.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even need him to turn into, like, a disgusting, goopy fly monster. Like, although, like, you know,
but
that's
it doesn't
great.
Also feel disjointed.
Yes. Yes, and it's a lean movie too. To continue to use like him with the same five pairs of clothes. Like, we could have seen like the first scene, he's getting ready for like the expo that they meet at, and you see that he's got all the same clothes, and he picks it up, whatever. And then she's getting ready. Her boss is like giving her attitude, and which we find out that her editor, what is her ex, who's deeply not over her,
which again we only find out after her interaction
with Seth. Because we meet her editor as her editor first, and then we find out that he's an ex later, and then a little bit later we find out that he has a lot of issues. A lot of attachment issues. We should touch on the love triangle quick, because that is a very—
I don't see it as a love triangle,
really.
No,
well, yeah, I guess because it's like a love line and a dot.
Yeah.
Because his name is Stathis. The editor.
Wild.
Yeah.
Wild.
And it's like, is that like stasis? Is that like a where he's like in arrested development?
Yeah, I don't know. He's very interesting. Yeah. So mm-hmm. he's the editor. He's her ex. He pretty quickly is dismissive of her and this assignment, even before he kind of finds out it's romantic. Although I do have a feeling that he was intimidated, and that's part of it.
Right. It could have been any guy.
Yeah. Like, yeah. But then as Gina Davis and Jeff Goldblum start like sleeping over and doing all this stuff, he like loses his mind and is then stalking her and all this stuff. But what's interesting then is as we go then farther through the movie and Jeff Goldblum is like taking a turn, she goes back to him for help, really. Mm-hmm. And
not romantically, but goes to him for assistance.
And he does. And he does so largely, I would argue, maybe even like without the promise of her getting back together with him. It's questionable, but
sure.
I find it was really interesting. I thought it was a really just like advanced way of showing that story, because you meet this guy, you're like, what a dick. And then you're like, oh no, this man's insane. Like clinically insane. I hate this man. Mm. And then you're like, I was like, well, he really is helping her out, dude. Like he's doing what he can. And so that's like interesting too, because I feel like he does love her for how nutso he is. And so it's really interesting how, and that she feels she can go to him for help.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's not him being like, I can help. And she's like, stay out of it. Like she goes to him for help and he does.
That is an interesting perspective, because he does have a line when he breaks down in the department store where he says, you know, I just want to see you happy, even if it's with another man. And I guess that could like show that he genuinely cares about her. Although like you and I know that that's like a common like line that like guys will use, but
yeah, but I don't know. I took it as more complicated than that. Like
sure,
that
sure.
Maybe it's not an easy one or the other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's who knows what comes out of a person when they witness, and I can't stress this enough, a human fly hybrid.
Yeah.
At the molecular level.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just interesting how like the romance and like the horror like intertwine, and like there's a middle part where like they kind of mush together in like a weird way, and then it just like transitions pretty much into full horror.
Yeah, it's interesting. He gets to the point in his transformation where he's kind of talking. She's over visiting. She keeps kind of checking on him. But it's getting longer and longer between visits. So she comes in and is like shocked every time at how far it's gone.
And we are too.
And we are too. And it gets to a point where he's kind of going on this rant about insect politics and how they don't have politics. And she's kind of just like, I don't know what you're saying. And he's like, you can't come back, because next time you do, I will try to hurt you and I don't have control over this.
Right. And that seems like a very common, like, almost like a werewolf sort of, like, vampire.
It just, like, it made me so, I don't know, it really got to me.
Yeah, like, it was the last, like, shred of Seth, like, letting her know, like, hey, like, I can feel myself slipping.
Yeah, like his last thing he wanted to do was protect her.
Yeah, and that's really admirable. And, yeah, it is just amazing watching this, like, you know, it's a physical degradation, but like it's just as much mental.
Yeah.
Because like he starts calling himself, he's like, I'm not even Seth anymore. I'm Brundlefly. Like call me Brundlefly.
He's like, I'm something that hasn't existed.
Yeah. And he's like, I'm going to be the first insect politician, and I am going to like write children's books to teach them about like insect happenings. Yeah.
And then to skip to towards the end, as his brain then advances, he kind of loses that humanness. And so he wants to put them all together, like her as a pregnant person and him. And he's like, we'll all be together as one. And I thought that was really interesting. This kind of like if you take the humanity out of love and it's just like
possession.
It's possession, and it's being together, and how that's not healthy love. How making yourself one and having no boundaries and just like possessing and like all being together and being each other's whole lives isn't the healthy full manifestation of love. Like that's not the thing you want to achieve. And It doesn't, I mean, it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. Sorry, we're going to spoilers now. Mm-hmm. We kind of have to, because I feel like to talk about the romance, we have to.
Yeah.
But he is in his final transformation, in which it's like fully a fly. Like there's no human features. Like his skin is shed off. Like his whole facial, like jaw is gone. Like he's a fly.
Yes.
And he kind of crawls out of the machine and he grabs the gun she's holding and he puts it to his own head.
Yeah.
And like that moment of like, cause the look in his eyes, it isn't even like anger. It's like, it's desperation.
It's like defeat.
Yeah. And so it's crazy because even in this, the utmost state that he can get to, mm-hmm. there's still enough of him, because if it was true evolution, he wouldn't, right? Like if you're truly in this insect mode, you would attack her and kill her, right?
Right.
So for him to still have enough to be like, do it, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Is like, he still always was him, which is interesting. And she does, and she shoots him and kills him, and the movie ends.
Like immediately.
Immediately. Like yeah. the last shot is her like crying with the gun like down.
Yeah.
And so you don't see resolution of her. Like, does she keep the baby? Does she not?
Does she go back to stasis?
Right. Does she go back to stasis? Does she ever, is she ever the same? Now, is there a sequel? Maybe it,
yeah,
sure.
There is.
No,
yeah.
I'm saying maybe not. But in my mind, I thought about this a lot last night. I think that she has an abortion because otherwise part of their story would continue. And mm-hmm. the movie takes place over the entirety of their relationship. So for a baby to happen afterwards would betray that agreement that we've made with the movie. So I believe that she has an abortion.
Well, canonically, she does have the baby.
The thing with that, though, is that I don't care.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, fair,
I am
fair.
Choosing to live in the world of the first movie, and if we're living in the movie in which the beginning and end of their relationship is that,
yeah.
then there would not be a baby.
Totally true.
Yeah.
Totally true.
But I loved that was the ending.
Same. And they shot a bunch of like epilogue scenes, which like I every time I watch the movie, even though I've seen it so many times, like I'm always expecting like it to fade out and then fade back into like a nice like sunny day and like yeah. we see the fallout, the aftermath, but we never get that.
Yeah.
The first credit we get is the credit for the design of the monster, which yeah. yes, you should. Yes, that almost above any other movie should that be the case.
Totally.
So, yeah.
This movie rules. I like basically broke my fingers going on Letterboxd to give it 5 stars.
That's
and
good.
Just I think my review was just like, yo.
Yeah.
I immediately was like, oh, this fucking rips. Like, you know when a movie, everyone says it's a classic and it's been so long, you're like, oh no, I'm not gonna like it. Like it's mm-hmm. it's too hyped up. Wasn't the case. It was awesome.
Well, also interesting, I feel like when a lot of people say that about some movies, it's a movie that like is built upon afterwards.
Yeah.
In the genre. But I feel like The Fly is not really that case.
That's true.
Like the interwovenness of romance and horror in the movie is honestly pretty unique. I don't know, I just struggle to think of a movie that like handles it better, you know, when yeah. when we had this idea for this special Valentine's Day episode, like The Fly was the first and only movie I
yeah,
thought of.
Yeah,
because it does foster so much just interesting like thoughts about yeah. humanity and how we treat love and like yeah. the animalistic side of it, of like you said, when he's like fully the fly, like it's about like possessing and like all being one, like a hive mind almost.
Yeah.
But like none of that is in Seth when he's just a human,
right.
You know, he's
that's the animal.
Yeah. Like Seth may be like, you know, introverted and not get out much or talk to many people, and you can see that he's pretty awkward, but like, you know, when he starts to fall for Geena Davis, like, it's pretty wholesome. And it's
easy. Their yeah. love is easy. This movie rules. It definitely is gross and goopy. Don't eat while you watch it.
You can eat during the first half hour. You're fine.
Yeah. And some of you might still be like, that's too gross for me. Mm-hmm. I have no problem with that. I love practical effects. And like, I don't know. But it definitely is like, woo-hoo-hoo! The Fly rules. I'm really excited to see Lisa Frankenstein tomorrow. Is today Monday? and chit chat about it, people have loved and hated it, which means it's right on track.
Yes.
Like with every, like how Diablo Cody's movies do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's gotten like pretty positive reviews. I was honestly not expecting it just based on the type of movie it is.
I saw a review that gave it 0 stars and said it was like the worst thing ever. And I was like, we're back, baby. and obviously it approaches it in a very different way, but I do think it'll be really fun to see. And it's going to be fun. It's very different vibes, but it's my type of shit. So we'll be back in a second.
Yes. Enjoy our conversation about Lisa Frankenstein. Woo-hoo. All right. So we just got back from seeing Lisa Frankenstein. And before we get to our thoughts, we haven't talked to each other about what we thought at all. Before we get to all that, I'll give you a little synopsis from Letterboxd for Lisa Frankenstein. In 1989, a misunderstood teenager has a high school crush who just happens to be a handsome corpse. After a set of playfully horrific circumstances bring him back to life, the two embark on a murderous journey to find love, happiness, and a few missing body parts along the way. This film is written by Diablo Cody, someone who we really...
Friend of the pod,
Diablo Cody, Midwesterner herself. And, you know, she's written a couple movies that we both really love. Juno being one of my favorite films, and then Jennifer's Body being one of yours.
Yeah, which, actually, to be clear, Juno's also one of my favorite films.
Right. Have you seen any of her other films? Like,
yeah, I've seen a few.
Like Tully and Young Adult.
Tully I didn't see, Young Adult I did.
Mm, okay. And it's the directorial debut of Zelda Williams, who was Robin Williams' daughter.
Yeah.
So, that's interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Mal, the question is, what did you think of this movie?
And I'm sure you're going to be like, I had the same thought. I felt like someone inceptioned my mind and was like, let's make a movie that this particular bitch would love. Mm. Like, this movie doesn't have a more targeted audience than me.
Okay, why do you think that is?
It has so much of that Diablo Cody, like, dialogue that I love. It has so much John Waters-ness to it, which I, like, had a feeling, and campy and bright colors. But horror influences, not just in the movie, but like even the character herself has horror posters up.
Right.
The character of Lisa is like a character I'm really drawn to, and like a very complex character, and not just like a innocent feel good. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, there's more to her. She's complicated.
True.
The fashion is fantastic. It's a teen movie, but without like being a teen movie, if that makes sense.
I'd say it's definitely for people who enjoy that genre. I wouldn't.
Yes.
In a way where I wouldn't say it's like for teenagers.
No, it's for people like me that like teen movies.
Yeah. And although I could definitely see like some areas where they probably had to cut it.
Yeah.
To make it PG-13. It definitely still hits the tone. Yeah.
Just like going in, I had a feeling, but I was like, yeah, I'm like the like most primary target for this movie, and did it right. There was like a little lull for a little bit for me. Like it started really, really high, dipped a bit, and then kind of brought up to not to where it started, but like to pretty high. So it's not like I just like loved everything through and through, but I still like loved everything, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I honestly thought it started like a little rough where I was like trying to get into it and it wasn't really working. But at a certain moment, it definitely clicks for me. I was definitely like in the groove with it, and I was just appreciating. Although like, I'm definitely not the person that this film is for.
Yeah.
I was definitely still enjoying the Diablo Cody-isms and like,
yeah,
it's a very heightened movie, you know?
Yes.
Like in that like John Waters way, I would say that the stepmother character is like straight up like a John Waters, like almost like a Valley of the Dolls.
And
like,
it's Carla.
Yeah.
I love her.
Yeah. And she's great in it. She's like a perfect Diablo Cody character. And
yeah.
Yeah. She has one of my favorite lines in the film, which is, if she's not crazy, then she is goddamn inconsiderate. I really liked that. But let's talk about the cast for a little bit.
Oh my God, what a cast.
Yeah, so Lisa is played by Catherine Newton.
Yeah.
And I had seen things that she has been in, but I didn't like know it was her, and like this is the first thing where I really took notice of her. I thought she was great.
I can't imagine someone doing it better.
Yeah, I thought she really hit kind of like an interesting tone in her like physical performance, especially. And kind of like, I thought everyone had very interesting like tones of voice and like ways they said lines. Cause like Diablo Cody dialogue, you kind of have to hit a certain, like, you know, tone of voice. But yeah, I thought she was really, really great. I thought, honestly, a lot of the movie like really rode on her performance, and she definitely held it up.
Oh my God. Yeah. Also, like, in a side note, and this is a combination of like her acting and the character and the costume, but it immediately made me have such a crush on Lisa. I was like, oh, I'm crushing on Lisa so bad. Like, but yeah, costuming at 10,000 out of 10.
Yeah. And I can see how people wouldn't like this movie because, like, it is, like, so heightened. And, like, if you don't know it's Diablo Cody, and if you don't know who that is, and you're just like, oh, this is, like, a movie, like, you're not going to have that good of a time. Like, the first time I saw Jennifer's Body, I did not like it because I was approaching it like it was, like, a movie, you know, like a traditional, like, horror film. And it really isn't. Like, you have to approach it where it's like, this is the person who wrote Juno.
Yeah.
And that really helps out. And it helps out here a lot. Like, the way that everyone dresses, especially her, is, like, very heightened and, like, not believable that someone would do that. But, like, it's more about saying something about what the character is feeling and what they're going through than actually being, like, a believable piece of, like, clothing.
She definitely writes movies for specific audiences in mind and doesn't really give a shit how that is extrapolated. So like I was thinking like, and this, and I don't mean this in like a talking down way, but like in a genuine way, like if you're someone who wouldn't like this movie, it's probably because it's like not written for you. Like you're saying, like if it's not, like if you're not the person going for those things, you're probably not gonna like it. That being said, if you are, you're gonna love it.
Lots of talk about like periods and pads and like vibrators and stuff like that. Like very like frank kind of like but anyway, let's talk a little bit more about the cast. So Cole Sprouse is the creature. He's never named. He's never given a name.
Correct.
Which is interesting. I thought he was good.
Yeah.
For like a role like this.
I quite liked his physical performance, to be honest.
And his facial performance was like interesting and good, where like he has to, like he can understand what Lisa is saying, but he can't talk.
Yeah.
So like it's really riding on like his facial expressions, and like they're very like you have to tell what he's thinking based on his facial expressions, and that's where a lot of the comedy comes from.
Yeah, but it wasn't like, because of this movie being heightened, they could have heightened it and made it dumb, but they didn't.
Right. It could have been like a Sam Raimi, like Army of Darkness.
Yeah, goofy. I think this is something where their interplay worked a lot, because his facial reactions were pretty subtle, but she like immediately would know what he was saying without even like questioning it. And that's like kind of what made it work, you know? Yeah.
And, you know, I said just a second ago that it wasn't goofy. And I think that that is like a really good distinction for this movie, because like, it's not goofy. It's not like a parody. It doesn't like go that extra mile. Like, it's just taking you on this journey, and it's not, and it's doing so full heartedly. Like, it's not like being like ironic with stuff.
Yes. No,
like this is like a very like I mean what I say,
which movie. Is why some men will hate it.
Yeah, it's not a movie that's like shy about what it's trying to do, and
it doesn't have any like shame in it.
Yeah. So
I think another huge solid point for me is her stepsister, Taffy.
Yeah. Talk about it. Yeah.
I don't believe I've seen her in anything, or at least like not to my conscious knowledge.
Yeah, her name is Lisa Sobanero.
Oh, that's funny. But. Wow. She was so funny and so likable in a character that, like, you could have not liked.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like how the character was written.
Yes.
A lot, because obviously she plays this, like, you know, very popular, conventionally attractive
cheerleader.
A little dumb. Yeah, it gets all the attention and stuff. But she genuinely cares about Lisa and shows her actual genuine, like, care and affection and, like, empathy, which you never see in a character like this.
Yeah.
And I really appreciated that, especially, like, it's not, like, hammered in right away that it's her stepsister.
Yeah.
You just kind of figure that out along the way.
But that, I mean, that actress did an absolutely phenomenal job with it.
Yeah, and the character seems oblivious even to, like, if she says something that comes off, like, very, like, curt or rude or, like, self-aggrandizing or self-centered, like, she doesn't even, like, really notice it.
Yeah.
So you can't, it's in a way where it's, like, you can't even, like, fault her for, like, it's just the...
She's really likable. The visuals of this movie, phenomenal.
Pretty good.
So much fun 80s flair, but still in kind of a unique take.
it's a little thing for me, but, like, I thought it was a little over the line with the 80s stuff.
Oh, I disagree completely.
I think that the past, like, decade, we've gotten so much of it. And I would not put this in, like, that camp, you know? But it is still, like, every song, and it's, like, every shirt and, like, every poster. It's, like, letting you know that it's, like, the 80s. And
yeah, but I mean, think about the tone of the movie. It matches the tone of, because it's a heightened movie.
Yeah, but as you like to say, it doesn't mean I have to like it.
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
That's the best golden ticket.
It's so fun to look at, and it's so fun to have all that be true, and yet she still stands out,
you know,
as this kind of goth, whimsical 80s person. And so it's just really fun. Like I said, the costumes are everything. The house design is fabulous. Mm-hmm. It's like a very fun movie to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And God, what a fucking good time.
Yeah. You know what I thought while I was watching it?
Huh.
I was like, this is a sleepover movie.
Yep. Yeah, it is, baby. I literally was like, I can't wait to watch this over and over again.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow, nice.
It is just, like, everything that I like. And again, that's not to say that there isn't parts that I thought, like, were dipped in, you know. But it just did so much good for me and was so fun. And, like, I just was so on the movie's side.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many, like, influences or pieces you can feel. Like, obviously, you're going to feel Diablo Cody, but you feel, I said the perfect double feature would be Suburban Gothic.
Yep.
I stand by that. And obviously, we're getting some Heathers in there. You get a lot of Tim Burton in there. Like, there's all these different things, but it doesn't feel like a ripoff of any of those.
Yeah. It's, like, recontextualizing those things into, like, its own distinct sort of vibe, which I appreciate. That's why, like, the 80s thing doesn't bother me so much, is because, like, it's clearly using it, like, in a little bit of a different way. It's not being a phrase I like to use is it's not, like, beating you in the head with a Rubik's cube. It influences the story, but, like, it's not the whole thing of it, where it's like, remember the 80s, so does this movie. I thought it was a pretty good movie. But I think that really has to do with the script and the performances. I don't really think I liked the directing very much. I thought that in the hands of, like, a different director, like, it doesn't have to be Jason Reitman.
Well, and it's, like, her first movie.
Right.
So fair. That's fair.
Yeah, it's her, feature-length debut. She did a couple short things, but, I thought if it was in the hands of, like, a more seasoned director, I thought it could have been, like, just over that hump into something, like, really, like, distinct, where it's like, this is special.
Sure,
Like, and I thought some editing choices were kind of strange. Like, I feel like a lot of the humor hit, but I felt like some of the, like, bits went on a little long, where it's like, Oh, well, if you just removed that last comment, like, the joke would have been way funnier.
Yeah, like a 2 second. Yeah.
Yeah, there was some stuff, like, just stuff that, I don't know, like, You wouldn't notice if it happens once or twice, but it was kind of like pretty consistent.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, and but I don't know. There's enough right with this movie where like I definitely don't regret watching it. I probably wouldn't like choose to watch it again, but I would recommend it to people who I know that this is their
thing. I was gonna say, am I right that you probably were watching it going, Mal's probably fucking loving this?
Yes, I'm like, I don't even have to ask them. Like,
yeah. Now that we've contacted the movie, do we want to talk about like the love aspects?
Yeah, totally. The love. Well, I guess we should talk a little bit about, because we're talking about horror and romance.
Yeah.
Not like a ton of horror here.
Yeah.
It's more of like I mentioned, recontextualizing elements of horror into kind of this own thing. And it's not exactly a love story either.
Yeah.
So, why don't you go ahead?
Yeah. To give kind of a little more detail of the plot and stuff. Basically, this girl like always visits this cemetery, which, to give context, if you see this and you're like, I'm confused. In other countries and places, they separate like grave sites if you're unmarried and if you're an unmarried man or woman, which is why she lives by this like bachelor's cemetery.
Yeah, that it's called the bachelor cemetery.
Yeah,
right?
So yeah, that's a thing that like it doesn't really take place in America, but like that's a thing places do.
Real quick, this movie is distinctly set in the Midwest.
Oh yeah,
it's a Midwest ass
multiple
movie.
Milwaukee mentions.
Yeah,
a Chicago hat. A Fuddruckers mentioned. What was the shirt? Violent Femmes?
Oh, Violent Femmes, which Milwaukee native band. Rocky Rococo's is also mentioned, which I was once close to being on their marketing team. But anyway, Carla has that great line, don't you Milwaukee me.
Sorry
to interrupt, but go ahead.
No, you're that's important.
Yes.
The Midwest is important.
Yes, it's Diablo Cody said that it's set in Illinois. Specifically,
cool.
So
I'm gonna assume Illinois close to Milwaukee because of just comments, some comments made.
Yep.
But no, so she hangs out in this cemetery lot because she's, you know, an outcast, and outcasts be doing that. But she has this one particular like headstone that she really likes.
There's like a bust.
Yeah, there's a bust on top of it,
and it's distinctly Cole Sprouse.
It's distinctly Cole Sprouse. But she like talks to it, and she's just very fond of it. And she just, you know, kind of has this playful relationship. And anyways, a thing goes wrong in classic movie where she's like, I wish I could be with you.
And lightning strikes comes. Yeah. It's like that movie Big or whatever. But
sure. I haven't seen that in years, but I'm sure you're right.
Yeah. Wishes. And then
so
the lightning.
He comes to life, and it's like funny. It's like fun zombie rules because, again, like you said, like he can't talk, but he can understand her.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that's funny about the synopsis we read is it's not necessarily immediately a love thing, but she just kind of takes him on as friend, although it's pretty obvious he likes her.
Yeah, because she doesn't even see it as that. Like,
no.
There's even like a distinct scene where like Diablo Cody clearly was writing it like a friend zone sort of thing.
Yes, 100%, because she likes this other boy at school.
Yeah, and she's like, oh, you're so supportive, like that sort of thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, so it doesn't, but it's fun in the way that they get to know each other through this dichotomy of like her being an outcast because of who she is, and him being an outcast because of, like, situationally, he's a zombie, you know?
Right.
And a lot of their relationship is, well, all their relationship is, like, him listening to her, you know? But it's funny because he's, like, never annoyed by it. Like, he's happy to listen to her.
Yeah,
and
totally.
Hang out with her and help her pick out her clothes.
Yeah, and that... There's a sequence. This kind of accentuates something I was talking about, but there's a sequence where like she's like dressing him, and like it is a cool thing of like there's like it's like a wholesome thing because like she has a walk-in closet, and whenever she wants him to change clothes, she closes the closet doors so he has like privacy to change. I think that's neat.
Yeah,
that's nice. But what I was saying about some things going on a little long, like, clearly they're doing a play on the old montage trope of someone coming out in a certain dress and then the friends like shaking their heads no, coming out in a different dress and they consider for a second and then they shake their heads no. Third dress, big thumbs up, big nods, and then But in this movie, I think he changes clothes maybe 7 times.
Yeah, I could have done with even just 1 to 2 less.
Yes, exactly. And that's what I'm saying. It's never like that big of an issue, but it is like 1 or 2 less. And you're so close to being like a really, really awesome little moment. But yeah.
But and it's fun. So he's...
Do you want to like get to spoilers maybe before getting like too deep into... like details of what
is there
happens.
Anything we want to say before we get to spoilers?
I think we got it. I think we're good. So
I would say if you like the movies I recommend to you, you should go see it.
So we're gonna get to spoilers. So and then we'll end off the episode then. So for now, we'll just say thank you for listening. And go see this movie. It was very fun in theaters for sure. Okay, so spoilers. So the thing that I want to bring up first is I was surprised that Cole Sprouse doesn't talk the entire film.
I know, I loved it.
Yeah, I was expecting, like, the classic Frankenstein where, like, and, like, sounding out words and it's really, like, slow and, like, but we didn't get any of that.
No.
That was pretty refreshing, to be honest. Sometimes in these movies when you have a being that can't communicate and then is able to like gradually communicate better, like their character changes.
Yeah.
And like the type of like interactions they have fundamentally are different.
Yes. The one thing I appreciate about this movie is I wasn't sure how it was going to end. One.
Me
and
too.
Two, there was a lot of points where I was like, oh, they're obviously going this way, and they didn't.
Mm.
So one thing I thought it was maybe going to do is have this thing where like, oh, he actually was like violent when he was alive. Like he previously, prior to being dead, was like violent.
Or,
and that's why that, you know?
Yeah. Or that Lisa like actually killed her mom.
Yes.
And this is like a...
And they don't
extension
any
of that.
And there's so much. Usually I hate when a movie leaves things unanswered, but this is a movie where a lot of things unanswered just don't matter and it's fine. So, I don't know. I think the relationship is really interesting. He ends up, you know, killing people for her, essentially. But the thing I think is interesting is, it's not really, in my opinion, out of jealousy. And I know at first it's like, oh, what about the guy, the dick guy? Here's what I was thinking about, though, as we were leaving. He notices the sister's car when she goes up. And I think he goes up because he's upset about the sister and them betraying her. I don't think it's out of jealousy that he goes. I think then because that happens, he's like, sees the opportunity. But I really do think he goes up because he sees the sister's car, figures out what's happening and is upset for her. And not just in a like, I'm jealous, you know, because there was obviously allegory to the story at the beginning and the credits, which love, of how like the guitarist stole his original woman away. And I was like, oh, it's going to be just like that. But it wasn't. It really wasn't.
Yeah, I did not see it that way, but I can definitely see that being the case for sure. That kind of gives me a different perspective, honestly. And and that shows kind of like a little bit of empathy on his part because he knows what that feels like.
Totally. And
yeah,
like,
sure.
She, you know, he gets upset and kind of goes after the sister. And then when she says no, he immediately stops.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like he's...
Yeah, true.
And that's why I kind of take it as like he really is doing it purely out of what seems to be a genuine, as it can be, what's best for her based on her feelings, not him. And it shows, I think, that he really gets and respects her and is like, okay, that's not what she wants, then I'm done. Immediately leaves. You know what I mean? And I thought that that was really cool.
Yeah.
That is one thing I saw coming, that the sister was sleeping with the boy.
Yeah.
Which I was upset, but I thought it was interesting how it was handled, because I thought then it was going to turn and you find out the sister's like a total bitch and the whole time she's been like, just she's a complicated character and you know, both things are true.
Yeah. Sometimes people just do stuff. A couple things I want to touch on before we end off here. I was expecting like the big scene where the family, like through some mishappening, the family walks in on like the fact that there's this zombie.
Yeah.
And then she has to explain. And there's not a scene at all like that. The closest thing is when we walk in on like her crush and her stepsister,
yeah,
you know, in the bed together. I thought that was interesting that we didn't, because it's like if you've seen that scene, you know what it is, so we can go a different direction.
And they were like, sure.
I appreciated that. And then the other thing, I was expecting a scene where Lisa kind of gets like a talking to, because as the movie goes on, as you mentioned, she does go off the deep end and she is unhinged and she's doing some like, you know, very bad things and, you know, being very selfish and like kind of like using him, honestly.
Yeah.
And I thought that there might have been like a thing where like, you know, Cole Sprouse's character like somehow communicates with her that like, what, you're treating me unfair and like this isn't, and he actually walks away or something, right, or something like that. And it was interesting that they didn't go that route. I think I would have preferred it if they did, because like she does kind of like go unchecked, acting out in this way.
But I know what you mean. Mm-hmm. I don't, but I wanted two moments I wanted more were the moment where she realizes like kind of who he is and that he's cool and she brings him upstairs.
Yeah.
That moment and the moment that she really finally gets together with him, I needed a little bigger. I needed a little more moment of realization.
Sure.
Like a little more dialogue or look or a moment.
Yeah, I really liked the moment. This might be what you're talking about, but when he plays piano for her.
That's not what I'm talking about, okay, but I did love that.
Yeah, because it's like, this is like, he actually gets to like express himself in a way.
Yeah.
Like through his art.
Yeah.
Which is really nice. And there's this really great moment where she has this realization where she says like, oh my God, like you lived a life. And then he like, he just points at her. And then we as the audience know exactly what he means, where he's like, you live a life too. Like,
yeah.
And it's in a way where like, he's not jealous, but like he has the perspective as a dead person, like you live now.
Yeah.
Like you are alive. So I would have liked more of that stuff. So.
I get that. Yeah. I just, that moment where she realizes like it's him, it's been him this whole time.
Yeah.
And I think the reason I'm okay with not what you want, what you said would be better is because I think the inciting incident is finding her stepsister and that guy together and being like, I've been focused on all these other people and here's this person.
Yeah, totally.
Who's been here for me. But I needed a little more of that. I needed that to be, solve that issue kind of her being like, God, I've been like an asshole. This guy's right here. You know what I mean?
And that would have totally like solved my issue with it.
Right.
Of like where she doesn't either have him like confront her about it or have her have like that self realization moment.
Yeah, I just needed even like 10 seconds of a little more of that to kind of solve both those issues together.
I totally agree.
Yeah, but I really thought it was fun. And I don't know, I kind of halfway through was like, I'm not sure how this is going to end.
Mm-hmm.
And she dies. She, you know, Romeo and Juliet's it. She kills herself.
I did really like the tanning bed concept. I thought that was really neat, especially because it's like, that's the closest thing the movie does to like harken back to the original Frankenstein.
Yeah.
And I think maybe the movie's best moment is where he rises out of it and like hits his head and like the lighting is all neon.
It's really
and, like,
good.
Yeah. And it's like, this is the movie. Yeah. Like this is what the movie is. Yeah. It's kind of like this deep fried 80s Frankenstein.
And
so.
that moment when she gets in and you know that she's killing herself so they can be together. And she gives him the note. And, that made me tear up a little bit.
The note? Like what it said?
Just the note and what it said and everything. And just that moment I thought was so sweet. And
I thought that the contents of the note could have used another draft, to be honest.
I was fine with it.
It was, I was like, oh.
I just thought it was nice because, like, I knew that was what was happening, but just that moment and, I don't know, something to be said about, like, she's always the one talking, but she gave him something written, mm-hmm. And just having that moment. And then, of course, we get the end, you know, where her stepsister and father come to the grave, and the stepsister's wearing the mother's rosary, which
right.
I think really shows that, like, she really did care,
yeah.
And that in some part of her, she understands or has this acceptance of it, at least.
Yeah.
And she sees the beloved wife. Oh, God, I'm getting emotional talking about it. And then, you know, we go and we see him, who's now, for the, like, I would say 95% humanoid. He's a little pale. He's a little something. And she's newly from the dead in her wrappings. And they've kind of reversed, you know what I mean? And it really is this great, like, in sickness and in health. And, like, they've both had these moments. And he's like, she took care of me. And, like, now I get to be here for her.
Yeah.
And bring her. And we're going to be together. And I loved it. And it's funny because that's the only time he talks. And he's still reading from a book. It's still not actually his thoughts. Which is, I think, really fun and interesting.
Yeah, sure.
And I loved it. I thought it was a great ending. Because it has that John Waters, like, a little... Like, she dies. Like, she kills herself. Like, there's no... She doesn't get out of it at the end. There's no mystery where she keeps him in a house and everything goes back to... Like, no, she kills herself. Mm-hmm. She's a very unhappy teenager. Like, she's not happy and she dies, but they're together.
And I did like that it kind of harkened back to when she first meets him, where she's like, oh, when I said that I wanted to be with you, I meant, like, in the ground dead like you, not that I wanted to be living with you.
Yeah.
And now it's like... Now it's both.
Yeah, and it's funny because if you're a depressed person, I'm like, no, I knew.
Yeah.
I knew what you meant exactly. Also, can I give you my hot take that's maybe not a hot take?
Okay.
I think her dad killed the mom. I think her dad is the intruder.
Oh, wow. That, wow. Okay.
Yeah. I've been thinking about it a lot, and I don't think it matters, to be clear.
Sure, but what makes you think that?
So, when they're kind of giving the talk, the stepsister explaining how, like, yeah, and then 6 months later, like, she met her dad, and it was just so great because they could move on so fast. And it's, like, funny because it's, like, what you'd say if you're, like, that was a little fast.
Like, you think it was, like, planned? Like, where, maybe, like, or, where he already knew her?
Or, not necessarily, but just that he was unhappy because it was fast and convenient. Yeah, I don't know, like, the dog. I just think it is funny, and I think it adds a little John Waters-iness to it. Additionally, there's something to be said of, like, if that's true, and then, like, he's a little crazy, and she's his daughter, and she's a little crazy, you know what I mean? And so, I don't think it matters. Sure. Obviously, we never find out who the killer is. But I think that it just had that moment of funny to me where I'm like, we think he's this, like, very straight dad with this weird daughter, but I'm like, maybe not. So that's my hot take, is that when they're doing that whole speech of, like, yeah, it was so convenient. Like, they met 6 months later. It's like, yeah, no shit. Like, so that's kind of my, what I think on that. Again, not that it matters, but that's just my fun hot take.
If you ask Diablo Cody, she'll probably say, yeah, sure, why not?
Exactly.
Because if you guys don't know, she was asked recently at the premiere of Lisa Frankenstein, what do you think about Lisa Frankenstein and Jennifer's body being in the same universe? Do you think that that's what it is? And she was like, yeah, sure. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then, of course, everyone wrote articles like, oh, my God, they're in the same universe. And it's like... they're both in the Midwest.
Yeah.
Like, so,
I mean, they're in the Diablo Codyverse. Like,
the Diablo, where everyone talks like that.
Yeah.
And that's the only distinction.
Yeah. And I knew I was going to love this because once again, when it came out, people were loving or hating it and not understanding it. And I was like, we're back, baby. We're back.
I think that Wishapun is like the bizarro version of a Diablo Cody film.
Yeah.
Where, like, all the dialogue is like, batshit in the wrong way.
Yeah. No, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
My guess is that you're going to give this a 2.5.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah.
I am between, like, out of 10, I'm between, like, a 6 and a 7.
Oh, I was giving it out of 5, like Letterboxd.
No, I know, but I'm saying still, like, out of 10, I would say, like, a 6 or a 7.
Okay, well, what would you give it out of 5?
That's the hard thing. It's between a 3 and a 3.5.
Okay.
What would you give it? I'll guess... I'd say the lowest you would give it is a 4.
Yeah, I give it a 4.
Oh, okay, cool.
A 4 with a big fat heart.
Right, right.
Big a 4 fat that's heart. My favorite. You know, like, some of my most favorite movies are 4s.
Right, right, for sure.
Never mind.
What? No, we... No.
I have 4 friends.
All right, I think... do you have anything else to say about Lisa Frankenstein?
No, it's such a fun movie, man. Yeah. It's like a... It's kind of the opposite in The Fly in the sense where it's not, like, devastating. and it's really campy, but very, like... awesome to put it around Valentine's Day. I think that was smart. And I said to Preston, I said, I'm really glad this got a theater release. This could have easily been a streaming thing. And I'm just glad that it is in theaters.
This could be like a good like Galentine's movie going forward.
This is like I know today that we're recording is technically Galentine's, but I highly recommend going. And even if you're like, I don't know, just go on the cheap day like we do. So
yeah, cool.
I'm going to go look up all the pictures from all the costumes from this movie because it freaking ruled. And I immediately turned to Preston and said, should I be this for Halloween?
Yeah, you should honestly just look at the costume designers like letterboxed and like just watch all their films.
No,
like,
literally.
Because honestly, that was like a real big strong suit.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you're going to make a heightened movie, the costumes got to be there. Yeah. And they really, really were.
Yeah.
That's visually was telling you, hey, maybe don't ground this in your mind as a viewer.
And like, they almost even comment on that because the last outfit that she wears pre-death is she gets in the car and her sister-in-law is like, I wore that for a pageant. Like, even in the universe, it's
Halloween
like
pageant.
Way too dressy and weird for school. Like, it's even in the universe, they're like, what the fuck are you wearing?
Yeah.
And I love that.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Let's wrap it up there. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And I hope that everyone had a great Valentine's Day.
Woo! And if not,
there's always
next
year.
It's just one day. We love you.
Yeah. Stay strong.
Oh, my God.
It's tough out there.
Yeah. No, trust me. I get it.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.